Well, we're going to go to chapter 9, but the last verse in 8 we're going to reread first.
Yep.
Let me just ask you, Lord, to quicken your word to us. We ask you to open up Revelation and show us the things you want us to see, that we might be prepared for things that are coming. Lord, we don't want to be deceived. We don't want to just try to figure things out. We really want the answers to come from you, so we're just depending on you to show us what you want us to know. Thank you, Jesus. The last verse in 8, and I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels, which are yet to sound. You'll go to chapter 9. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key to the bottomless pit. So when I was praying this morning, I shared it with those of you that were in here, and I was asking God, what is the bottomless pit? How could a pit be bottomless? And the thought that came to my mind was, we're talking about a pit in the earth, because this angel came down to the earth with this key. So he's opening this pit in the earth, and for it not to have a bottom could mean that it went all the way through the earth to the other side and back out into space. Or at least to the surface of the earth on the other side of the earth. So somehow it would have transmitted all the way through. So when it came out on the surface of the earth, it came out with all this great smoke. When you think about it passing through all the layers of earth, and when you get to the core of earth, how hot it is, you know, and it's releasing all of that to the surface. And then Jackson, you can share what you thought about the bottomless pit.
Well, what keeps us on Earth is the center of the Earth, which is gravity. That's what we're all pulled towards. So if a tunnel were to go through Earth and you fell through that tunnel, just say you could survive, you wouldn't fall all the way to the other side. You'd be pulled to the center and float in the center because it's the center of gravity.
So there's no bottom when you're in the center. You're just floating.
Mm-hmm.
So it also could come from the very center of the earth to the surface. This things that are about to happen here, last week we talked about the possibility of a war near Israel, but now they're going to be talking about everybody who doesn't belong to Jesus is affected. So this somehow is affecting the whole entire earth, everywhere, men everywhere, and the whole face of the earth. And I wonder about that, even from that center, from that pit, does this thing come out in all directions on the earth? I don't know. It's really a strange thing. But there's two ways a pit could be bottomless. Bottomless. Going all the way through or at the core. And 9 verse 2. Anybody have another theories or ideas about that bottomless pit?
Well, you know how sometimes, I've heard people say before, like maybe hell was the center of earth because it is so hot and all that. What if that is, like he said, like there is no bottom to it because it would be what if that just opened up somehow, earthquakes, things that happened opened that and things were actually coming out of
all over
hell,
the earth.
Yeah. All over. It could be in more than one way, more than one place.
Right.
Maybe.
I learned in my math that a single point, infinite lines can be drawn through. So it can come from all over the earth, anyway.
Yeah, and we keep reading of a lot of earthquakes that happened in the last days, so it could be the opening of the earth that way. Any other comments on that? Before we go to the next thing? Okay, verse 2. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. So, again, whatever it is, coming from the midst of it or passing through the layers of it, is a lot like coming out of a furnace with this great smoke. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and unto them was given power, as the scorpions of earth have power. And it was commanded them they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God on their foreheads. I don't think that these locusts are really locusts, because as we go on and learn more about them, they don't sound like a bug, you know, they don't sound like an insect. And to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should torment them 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he strikes a man. And in those days shall men seek death and shall not find it, shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. So I think that one reason is he saw them like locusts, because locusts come in great swarms, and whatever, maybe it was coming out all over the earth, but it was enormous numbers of them just covering the earth like locusts. But I don't think that they could have actually been locusts, because of the way we'll see their descriptions as we go on. But I did some study on the scorpion poison. The sting of a scorpion injects a venom into the victim, and it's extremely painful, accompanied by burning or numbness, in some cases blurred vision, difficult swallowing, seizures, salivation, difficulty in breathing, and it seems to affect the nervous system in a person. It even mentioned it like a roving eye, like losing control of an eye, where your eye just moves, you know.
What is salivation?
Slobbering.
Yeah.
Just drooling.
Drool.
And the venom of scorpions contains
chlorotoxin.
Thank you. Or morotoxin. Scientists started extracting that venom. I don't know how they think that a poisonous venom can become a medicine, but they are trying to isolate a tumor in the brain and inject this only into the tumor and not let it get into the rest of the body, because the venom would kill the tumor. But they're, so far they haven't got that figured out. But anyway, that's how they know what the toxins do. They've used it on mice and animals with their experiments. And the shapes of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle. And on their heads were, as it were, crowns like gold, and their faces were the faces of men. See, this is why I don't think they're, right? This is why I don't think that they are literal insects, because they're the size of horses prepared to battle. When a horse is prepared to battle, back in that day, they would have armor and all kinds of stuff on it. So you're saying they were big, but they were similar to the shape of a locust. I didn't print the picture, but I looked at a new war plane, and in the design of this plane, the head was, it seemed like the head of the plane was up and the body came down, the front wheels were on the ground, and the two side wings that came up like this, it almost looked like the shape of a scorpion, that airplane did. And that would explain how the breastplate of the bug was iron, I mean, of the locust was iron. And as they go on, they talk about, you know, more about the face. The crowns indicate that they were authorities, leaders, presidents, rulers, that the people that were in them had some authority. They had faces of humans. And then, in verse 8, it said they had hair as the hair of women, and their teeth were as teeth of lions. I didn't get much about the teeth, but it's the first time I read it today that it hit me. They had hair like the hair of a woman. They might have been women, because we definitely have women soldiers leading in wars now. So many of these, I mean, if there's herds and herds of these things to cover in the face of the earth, no doubt some of them have women soldiers that are piloting them. So maybe it was actual women's hair. To him, that was strange, because women weren't soldiers back then. So he probably found it very strange that they had women's hair. So I didn't get anything about the teeth, except maybe you think about the grill on the front of a tank or something, you know, might look like teeth. I don't know, anybody getting anything else out of those descriptions? So I say this is rather short, but it's extremely interesting thing.
Yeah. You know how, like, if you ever watch National Geographic show or whatever, and the lions, the way that they'll, like, tear apart. heart with prey, and then their mouth is like got the stuff and blood. Yeah. Like it could be that even, like on something that would be ripping at flesh or whatever with the blood and things. And it's kind of gory, but.
Well, I wonder too, because you don't know, like even in the old war planes, how they would paint them, like
right.
they were
yeah.
like sharks.
Yeah,
yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah, they could be painted teeth.
Yeah. Kind of streamers that can look like hair too.
Yeah.
And what would you do to like decorate your vehicles?
In the next page, chapter verse 9. And they had breastplates, as it were breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots of many horses running to battle, which we assume that might be engines. You know, the roaring engines.
Of course, maybe a helicopter or something.
Yeah. We found that because these things are coming out of the earth, I don't fully understand because they're coming from the bottomless pit. And I don't get that because they sound like something designed by men.
Do you think that was just his perception?
That they were coming from the
that they were coming from a bottomless pit because there were so many of them, like it seemed like it never ended, so it seemed bottomless. Because you know how they have like underground bunkers and all kinds of things where they're doing secret things? What if there were so many of them all over? It looked bottomless, it looked endless. But it didn't say as a bottomless pit, called it a bottomless pit. But
well, also, if you cross-reference just the word bottomless pit, we will find that in a couple of minutes, that there's tons of references to the beast that came from the bottomless pit when it was open and is putting chains back in the bottomless pit again. So it has been confined by God. What's about to be released here has been confined by God. It's been restricted. And now the restriction is gone. And it's allowed to cover the earth. But it still comes through man. Because it seems like the war on earth is confined where God and the devil both function through men.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow it's still, with the iron, with all the aspects of engines, it's still something. Man's got his touch on it.
Mm-hmm.
In 10, they had tails like unto scorpions, and there were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. I think that is God giving them, because these are unsaved people, giving them another chance to get saved, yeah. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, and in the Greek tongue, Apollyon. Both of these words mean ruin, destroyer, minister of death, author of havoc, an angel of the bottomless pit, which later, all through Revelation, the angel of the bottomless pit is referred to as the beast. And that's interchangeable with Satan, with the devil. So he is definitely the king of them, but he was released from the bottomless pit. Later it says, he that was released from the bottomless pit. And we know that he came, he's had some kind of restriction on him, and now he's set loose. And though he was trapped in this bottomless pit, perhaps these things that came forth with him could have been from bunkers, you know, because he was released to bring them forth now, and then he brings them forth wherever he has them being prepared.
Another thing, because there are earthquakes and smoke coming out, the planes could have been flying through the smoke looking like they're coming out of the bottomless pit.
I think that's what they came out of it, though. Go back to verse 1. They're up in the bottomless pit. They're up in the pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit.
And out of the smoke, locusts upon the earth.
And out of the smoke, locusts came. You're right. The smoke might have come from the pit. It doesn't mean the locusts came out of that pit. They could have been in the bunkers. They could have been anywhere.
Yeah.
But then they came through the smoke. True, that's the point.
Might have been using the smoke to cover.
That had to be some horrible smoke that it darkened the sun. So when we look at Revelation going to some other revelations here where we talk about this beast that came out of that pit, 11:7. It says, and when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascended out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them. This is talking about those two witnesses. Mm-hmm. So it refers to him there as the one who came out of the pit. In Revelation 17:8.
She broke out as Revelation.
It was a revelation in
Right.
This was a look back before he came out of the pit. And it said, the beast that you saw was and is not and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. That's a little confusing because they're doing it as a look back. Mm-hmm. They're saying he once was led out of the pit, so now he is, but then he's not, but then he will be again. You know? Mm-hmm. Well, that could mean because he was slain and then came alive again. It also could mean because he's going to be locked up again for that 1,000 years and then loosed again.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that could be referring to. But again, it mentions this was the same beast that ascended out of the bottomless pit. So we're connecting that beast, who is the deceiver. And if in Revelation 20:1-3, I'm summarizing it here. It says, the angel that came with the key to the pit and a great chain, and then he cast this beast into the pit, shut him up, so that he should not deceive the nations anymore, till the 1,000 years are fulfilled, and then he's loosed. So we're seeing again, this is the same beast who deceived the nations. So now he's not coming out looking like a locust.
Mm-hmm.
He's the king of them,
mm-hmm.
but he is the same one that deceives. Jackson was just sharing a book he's reading on end times, and this character, this girl, this man comes who is so kind and so nice, and he's just helping her, and she's so taken by him, and it ends up that he deceived her to steal all the technology that she had in her possession,
mm-hmm.
so that he could take control. And it turns out he was the Antichrist.
She even asked him, why are you taking me in? And he quoted the Good Samaritan to her,
mm-hmm.
and then he turned out the Antichrist.
Yeah, that's the devil. That's the devil.
Yeah, not possible. Now, if other references to this beast, I didn't write them all down, but in Revelation 13:14, 16, 17, 20, if you look through these different chapters, well, as we're studying through those chapters, you're going to see this beast again and again and again. And a lot of these are referring to the mark of the beast and the deceptions of the beast. So this is the same king who's over these locusts that are released here. And a lot of this, even when we're talking trumpets, it seems like we're still rushing through. And then later we get more details of what was going on during this time as a look back. Sometimes that's so hard. It's just for sake, give you every detail, keep it all in order. But in the long run, it's probably the best way if God would have done it. You thought anybody was doing it.
Yeah,
you might be pretty smart about that. So again, that's pretty short, and yet there's so much stuff there going on. But I think it's short because, again, it's summarizing a lot of things that we'll get details to later on. Remember when we saw in the seals where they're going quickly and saying that the men were crying, that the rocks would fall on them because they're hiding from God. And now when we see the devil's army is actually tormenting these men. But these are the people that serve the devil. These are not God's people. And the devil himself is tormenting them, and they're not even God's people. So why is he tormenting them? They're not even Christians.
Tormenting the men, yet the drivers may be women. It may have something to do with power, something more with...
Well, if the devil is the king of locusts, of the... these things that are tormenting men for 5 months. The devil is the king. He's telling them to torment these men.
That means all mankind.
All mankind.
Not men.
All mankind. But why would he torment the people that are not Christians? That's the question. What would be his purpose in tormenting them if they're not even Christians?
This world is motivated by fear, as Papa has said so many times, to show them the consequence of not following.
I'm afraid to turn, like you said, so I'm going to get a last chance at repentance and everything, and maybe he's thinking.
Doesn't the devil hate everybody?
Of course he does.
He does, but he usually has motivation in what he's doing. If he already owns somebody, you know, at this point,
but he hates
worldwide tormenting men, he's got to have some motive behind that. What's he after?
Maybe just because, you know, like evil escalates. And it's like he's just not even segregating anymore his people from not his people. He's just like trying to attack everyone, but God's protecting his own people. If there are any of his that are here, God's protecting when the devil can't get at him. So then he ends up only hurting his own.
Yeah,
going back.
Maybe that wasn't his aim though.
Going back to maybe even the beast being a computer, God gave me this, but America thinks, I saw this on a show, that Russia has a secret weapon, a secret supercomputer. And this was a myth in World War II, but they're thinking that they can confirm it from satellite images in the Russian mountains. They call it the Dead Man's Fingers. Russia is very protective about their leaders. So they put their leaders in this secret underground base. And the computer can sense if it's about to be compromised. And with no countdown, no warning, it will send off all of its missiles toward its enemy. All on its own. No countdown. You can't shut it down. It'll just send them. And I'm thinking, what if it's a computer and it's realizing maybe some doubt or danger? So it's sending the planes out to go do it. Because the computer's seeing what's best.
Could be. Mm-hmm. There's so much technology, and then when does technology get out of hand?
Oh, now you got all the AI.
Pre-programmed it with the artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. We keep seeing movies like that with the person of interest and, you know, those kind of
AI's
programs.
Taking over, man.
And if that was a myth in World War II, what could have been escalated to now?
Right.
I mean, computer almost thinking human.
There's another thought too. Though the devil is against Christians, he also wants to be worshipped. So if these men are not worshipping him, if they're still worshipping money, still worshipping themselves,
mm-hmm.
their own pride and their own ego, their own fame, then he now is wanting to force them and say, you will worship me. Or you will pay.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's what his power play. Maybe at the point we're done with deception, now I'm going to punish you if you don't worship. Mm-hmm. And that again, I don't know where in timing all of these things fit. You know, when we start reading details later, where do the details, where do these fit in those details of events? Because there's the time where Babylon falls and we don't know where that fits exactly into this yet, you know. But he hated Babylon. It was actually the devil that brought his 10 kings against Babylon to destroy it. That wasn't an act of God. It was allowed of God, but done through the devil and his armies. So he'll even destroy the people that won't worship him, even if they're not Christian. There won't be anybody worshiping themselves in the end. They'll be choosing God or the devil. Worship someone.
I think that's so awesome though about how God can even use the devil to his own good.
Yeah. Well, and he still puts the rules on him. You can torment the men, you may not kill them.
What, for 5 months?
For 5 months, you can torment them, but you can't kill them.
Yeah.
At that point, God is still mercifully saying, I won't let you kill them because I still am giving them time to get saved.
Right. And then they don't repent.
Right. It's like Job, you know, when he gave Job permission to do all the things, the devil's permission to do all that he did to Job, but there was a limit. You can't kill him.
Right.
You cannot kill him.
He did everything else to him, huh?
He did.
He wished he was dead.
Well, that's what it said just in here.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they were dead.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've had that. Have you ever been in a lot of severe pain? It's like, just take me to heaven, Jesus, you know. I'd rather die than stay here and suffer. Or even, you know, people that get that way after a breakup where they lose everybody and everything. Sometimes they'd rather die than live.
Can you just imagine, though? It almost seems as if God is against you and all the people around you are telling you to get rid of God, curse him.
Well, a lot of people will blame God, just like they do now. Right. Like, for all that stuff going on, people will blame God like they do now. Well, why does God let war? Well, why does God let kids die? I mean, they'll blame God for it.
Mm-hmm. Crook, our chicken died. That was Tempe's chicken. His beak was like this. Mm-hmm. And it died most likely of a rat, is what we think happened. And Tempe was upset. I mean, really upset. And I'm thinking, yeah, it's going to be kind of rough the next few days. But then she says, why would God let Crook die? That's just mean. I'm telling her, it was God's plan. I guess it was Crook's time to leave. And she's telling me, no, it wasn't Crook's time to leave.
You know what?
It must have been God.
Could have been starving to death. Because she couldn't really eat well with the way her beak was, and God was merciful to let her die rather than to keep suffering and starving.
There's a verse that says, they consider not that God took them from the evil to come.
Right.
There were things that would have been worse for them had they stayed here. And now they're in heaven, perfectly healthy and happy.
Right.
They're not unhappy about that. We're just unhappy because we want them.
That same thing of Tempe saying that is the same thing of people blaming God for things that happen to kids and whatever, okay? God allows people to make decisions, and he doesn't step in every time somebody's going to make the wrong decision. You know what I'm saying?
It's
so
not always
a rat, it gets in there and kills them. God's like, he doesn't put up in a, you know, force field, you know, to keep the bad stuff
up. And we could have said, why did God let raccoons eat all our chickens last year, all our new chickens, you know? But it wasn't like God did that or something.
There is
nature.
There is good and evil on the earth, and God is the one who is good, merciful, heals us after the evil attacks us.
But, like with animals, there's just a natural thing that happens. Those coons aren't even trying to be evil. They're just doing what they do. They're
hungry
animals, you know? So, yeah, you gotta kill and protect your chickens, but it's not like they're evil. Do you know what I'm saying?
It could have even been like, because coons will go after babies rather than bigger chickens. It could have been to reveal that family that was there to keep us from future.
Well, we got rid of them. We killed them. But I'm saying it wasn't like we should turn around and blame God for our chickens dying.
No.
Any more than you can blame God for children being abused. That is consequence of evil.
Yeah.
You know, that happens. And God, it tears him up.
God rest
but
his
he can't,
spirit.
But he can't prevent every bad thing from happening because there is a natural...
Could, but he doesn't.
He limits himself because there's a natural... There is a consequence to sin.
Right.
You know, the pleasures of sin are for a season. The wages of sin is death. That's what happens. That so because a simple choice is made, then there's consequence that comes. And God,
well,
please,
sometimes
as much as you can to change that.
Right? Because we don't think in eternal ways. God has an eternal plan for every single person. And when a child is born and dies at 2 years old, and we say God is cruel, that child is in heaven being raised for the purpose he created them for. They're happy.
Mm-hmm.
We're just not happy we don't get to have them here. Right? But if we're thinking in eternal ways, it's an honor and a privilege that we got to birth a child that has some eternal purpose that required them to be born on earth, raised in heaven. And I think that's where God showed me that they are going to have very special places in that 1,000-year reign. They're going to live their life during that 1,000 years, having been trained and prepared by God to do it. And it's almost an honor and a privilege. When we finally get done with this world and we start living that 1,000 years where Christ is in charge, and then we see one of our children and what they were created to do, then we're going to say, thank you, Jesus, I birthed this one. And we're going to be so excited for the honorable position that they have been prepared by God to live in. and we're going to be so excited. We have all eternity to be with that child. We had to give up a few years with them here because God had a great purpose for their life, and they're being prepared for that. But we think of everything in terms of what do I get, what do I have, what do I like on earth, when really our whole life is about eternity. We're created for some kind of emerging to be the bride of Christ. And, I mean, all the time we're growing up, we're waiting until we get married to begin our adult life with our partner. So all the time we're on earth, we're growing up spiritually to begin our eternal life with Christ in that relationship. And once we're out of this earth and we see those things, it's all going to make sense. But part of our faith testing is we don't like it now. It doesn't feel good now. We want what we want now. And we have to think in eternal ways to appreciate God had a very good reason for what he's doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand everything going on with children in heaven, but I know that it's important, because he showed me that one Mother's Day, that the babies that go to heaven that nobody on earth wanted, that we need to claim those babies as God needs us and adopt them so they look forward to belonging to somebody coming to heaven. And I've adopted a new one last week. As God was leading me, he said, there's another one in heaven I want you to take and name. So I'm trying to think of girls' names. It didn't work. It had to be a boy. And then I'm going through all these boys' names, and I kept coming back to Joel. It was like he's got to be named Joel. J-O-E-L. So we have a new one named Joel now.
Cool.
So we have 7 in heaven and 5 on earth. But I'm excited about that.
Like 12,
I can't wait to see their purpose having been taken to heaven as a baby. But they had to be birthed. They had to be human. Somebody had to birth them. And hopefully somebody God could trust to allow him to take them and to not hate God for it and destroy your relationship with him because you think God's mean, you know? He's not mean. He's eternal. He has great plans.
That reminds me of what you said about, I think it was King Saul who went and God told him to kill everyone, including women and children in that city. Like you said, they had to kill the children because if the children grew up knowing that Israel killed their parents, it brought like bitterness and hate in their hearts. So he was saving them from all that evil.
It was merciful to take them before they could grow up and hate.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that everybody has to make a choice for God. So if they're taken up there as a baby or a little child and they're raised for all these years in heaven and they have this certain purpose in 1,000 years, during that 1,000 years, they still are going to end up making a choice. When the devil is loosed at the end of the 1,000 years, those that were born during that period, those that never made a choice yet, having faced both good and evil, will make a choice. They'll have to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I hate being loosed.
Because
otherwise
they
can only sit, not
right.
Fair,
right? Right.
Right.
Well, that answers children go to heaven because they're not at the age of accountability. Yes, but one day they will be, and one day they'll have to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
They have an advantage.
God's not forcing anybody.
They have quite the advantage.
You'd think that the angels did too.
No, but they have even more advantage than the angels because the angels, like you said, didn't know where evil was going.
And they were already spirits, so their choice couldn't be changed.
But
either. These
children, they've seen all the evil too.
Right.
They've seen that. Mm-hmm.
So do you think during after the 1,000 years, the short reign that he has, all those children will be put, that were raised by God, put on the earth to be tested?
They'll be put on the earth, and they have special positions with Christ in ruling during that time. But at the end of the 1,000 years, the devil is loosed, and then he will tempt people again. Then they will be tempted, and then they will make a choice. I have lived with Christ all those years in heaven. Now I've lived with him 1,000 years, and now the devil comes and tempts me. And I could choose now to say, I believe that deceiver. I believe he could beat God. I think I would like to have money and wealth and fame. They could make those same choices, having never faced
some
it before.
Of them. Man.
don't know.
I don't think a lot of those children raised there well, but a lot of children born during that time are more likely to not be as wise about it. There is something very special about the babies God takes now from this lifetime. There's something really special about that. You got to realize when you train up a child in the way he should go when he's old, he will not depart. God has trained them up in the way they should go.
Yeah.
The Bible promised that they're not going to depart when they're old.
Yeah.
But children that are born on earth during that time and raised by parents on earth, some of them might make a wrong choice. Human nature. But by then, we won't be dealing with our human nature anymore. Because we're going to be in our glorified bodies by then.